welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Okay, folks. Well, if you doubt that they're desperate and they're going to do anything and everything they can to cling on to the control that they have over you, there's a lot riding on this. As a matter of fact, when you realize that the tyranny that they're raining upon us and the fact that we can actually get out of this, when they recognize the real threat that we pose, they will actually execute some very drastic plans. Now, what we're seeing in this election are that, just very drastic plans. It's now or never, folks. What's going on right now is Biden is outright buying votes. In other words, he's buying the votes of any kid or any person that has any type of student debt. I know some conservatives. I know conservatives that possess student debt that are going to basically get, I'll just say, this benefit, this unconstitutional, this illegal benefit, other than the fact that they can't go through bankruptcy is unconstitutional. The way they've initiated and have established the laws for student loans and debt, it's all unconstitutional. There's plenty of talk about this, but maybe not enough, because the reality is that the requirement in the Constitution is that all debt, the disposal of all debt through bankruptcy, be a uniform law throughout all the states. In other words, if you can actually apply for bankruptcy, all debt needs to be on the table for what that is. You can't say, oh, well, this debt, our debt, you can't be forgiven, but everybody else's debt will forgive. We'll allow you to forgive everybody else's debt but ours. That is tyranny. This is why the Constitution actually protects you from that. The bottom line is the buying of votes is literally outright. And I think it's interesting that the Saudis aren't playing with Biden. And that's because we have reached a point as a nation, because Biden has become the goat, the dolt, whatever you want to call him. He's basically the monkey on the string dancing for the global elitists. And he's doing their bidding, just like George Bush did. And George Bush had no problem when he got exposed for, you know, his inadequacies of a president and so forth. He didn't care. He didn't even defend himself when Obama blamed him for crap that he didn't even have accountability for. He bit his tongue because he's a good old boy, and he's going to, you know, carry his load. He's going to carry his, suffer those slings and arrows, so to speak, because he is going into the global stage as an elitist. Why does he care? Anyway, when we see these types of things going on in America, buying of votes, because they made it illegal for them to sell liquor on election day, you know, or for anybody to buy liquor for anyone on election day. The potential of buying votes by paying for somebody's liquor became illegal. Well, how is, you know, giving people this debt freedom all unconstitutional crap in the first place? Now you've gotten an advantage here, and we're gonna forgive that. That's the same thing as buying votes, and nobody's charging him. There is more than enough evidence, because he is using this for political gain, or he's trying to use this for political gain. There is more than enough evidence that he could be impeached if he was a legitimate president. More importantly, this is why we need to get Paul Venable elected and into the Senate, because he needs to be removed because of the 12th Amendment. He should never have been chosen president. And had they followed the 12th Amendment, he would not have been chosen president. That being said, As you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and that's a line you haven't heard in a couple of episodes. I have been in a hurry to kind of get through these episodes, or I should say, getting through the Constitution, as well as the fact that you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. You know, you're more than welcome. If you want to actually look at, you know, where did the evidence come from for all these freedmen to be killed in Louisiana, what have you, I'd be happy to share that. If you don't think I can talk the talk and back it up, then, you know, let me know. We'll be happy to share whatever things you have questions on. And when we finally get to a point where you can't refute anything I'm saying, then you'll probably see that once. I'm not an arrogant person. I love to be right, and I don't like being wrong. So there's nothing wrong with wanting to be right, and there's nothing wrong with not wanting to be wrong. But there is something wrong when you're a braggart or when you're out, you know, patting yourself on the back. I mean, Rush Limbaugh was a braggart. And he was a braggart not because he was really truthful. He was an entertainer that said things the way you like to hear them. And so there's a huge difference. I hate to tell you this, folks, and I know most of you know this. There is a big difference. Anyway, so we're going to dive right into the 16th Amendment because we already talked about the uniformity clause on this, but let me read it again. This was proposed in 1909. And it was questionably ratified in 1913. That took 4 years. Do you understand that? That took 4 years. The 14th Amendment barely took a year, right? Or a little over a year, because it was out to the states by the summer of 1866, and it was ratified in 1888. So it took about a year and a half. The next amendment, the 15th Amendment, regarding the, you know, they can't take away the rights or abridge the rights of any blacks to vote or any person based on race, color, personal servitude, what have you. In other words, they basically once again stepped forward to do the right things to ensure that the inalienable rights were being applied to all people, regardless of race, color, what have you. And so that one amendment went out and was ratified by 1870. So let me see here. I think, yep, it was proposed in 1869. The 15th Amendment was proposed in 1869 and ratified in 1870. In other words, the whole nation looked at, absolutely, this, are you kidding me? This is stupid that we're not doing this. And it was evil that the South was, but the evil spread. And it wasn't because, as Thomas Sowell talks about it, and as a matter of fact, Thomas Sowell talks about it in different ways, but as Thomas Sowell talked about it in his book, Black Rednecks, White Liberals, you know, as it started spreading, the racism really started spreading because of the whites from the South. And because they were trying... Here's a group of people that were finally emancipated. Now, they had a right, maybe, to be upset, or they had... I mean, we all have these rights to be mad, right? We have a right to be hurt. We have a right to feel the way we do, but we don't have a right to inflict or to cause harm to anybody or to take away or abridge their rights. So the racism that was being applied by the whites, even though racism may have been occurring on both sides, and there's probably evidence of all of that, the racism that was being applied by the public servants was unconstitutional. Don't think that the government itself, the U.S., we the people, are accountable for a tyrant violating the laws. Now, I am absolutely okay if it makes you feel better. I'm absolutely okay if the people, if you can convince the people that we need a pound of justice from Jim Crow. Let's say Jim Crow wrote all these laws, this guy Jim Crow, and I don't even know if he existed or not, but I know the laws existed, and I never did the research of whether that was really named after a, you know, who that was named after, what have you. But let's just say Jim Crow wrote those laws. And let's just say, you know, there's no doubt that people were unduly punished, people were unduly harassed, and people, you know, had their rights restrained from them. They suffered because of him. If you convince the people that we need to dig these people up and burn them in effigy, then I'm okay with that, if that's what it takes to get to the healing part. Because if you're Christian, then you need to forgive and you need to move on. And if you need closure, then that's the closure. But going to the United States, we the people who didn't do these things to you, it was very specific people that had the public trust, that abused their trust and violated their oath of office. So let's not keep on harping that the United States has been an empire building. It has been bad people that have been at the mantle of power who has used and abused that power. So, you know, if you really want to, you know, get closure, then I'm okay with actually, you know, it's just like the debt. I talked in the last episode about all of this debt that we're not accountable for. If the world really feels that, you know, hey, we want our pound of flesh out of America, then once we're done with Obama, once we're done with Clinton's, once we're done with all of the people, all of these politicians that had their hands, has blood on their hands for being involved in taking on all of this debt, spending all this unconstitutional money, every single person involved, we can ship them out and we can, you know, share them across the world of all this debt. We'll be right back after these two promos for me to close on this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
The feeling of better, you know, the closure of punishing somebody, you know, twisting the knife, throwing the salt on the wounds. You know, we want to be careful that we be just, and I believe if we're Christian, if the opportunity of mercy is available, we should consider it. But these people, knowing whether they knew because they were illiterate and ignorant, I don't know. Just because you're ignorant, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And so when I took my oath, when I became a Marine and took that oath to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, I started learning what that meant. And I held that. And as a matter of fact, that became very contentious with me amongst many of the Marines, even in, especially in the intel community. I mean, a lot of these guys were supposedly conservative, but I'm shocked. I'm shocked to see that how many of them really were progressives, communists. And I'm going, oh my gosh. I mean, some of these people, I can't name names, but I wouldn't trust them with my kids. That's how bad these people are. And they were in the intelligence community, and some of them still are. Some of these people still are. They're anyway, I digress. The whole point that I'm trying to bring up regarding all of these people, because we're talking about thousands and thousands, probably tens of thousands, that are still alive. Jimmy Carter is still alive, folks. There's no reason why he can't be sent off as a payment to say, you know what? Because what ends up happening, it's not really a payment. And the reason why we really need to consider doing this is because of the prisoner dilemma. Right now, nobody's talking. Right now, nobody knows how well the Chinese know what they're doing and how they are deliberately working to undermine us, to destroy us from within, because they know they may have to face us in the next few months. And they feel that they may have to exercise this to hurry along the collapse of the United States. Folks, you need to start getting this message out. You need to start. These podcasts are all there. I know I get a lot of hits. I don't get as much hits. I have not seen my counter, and I have not seen my ISP come back and go, hey, I don't know what you're doing, but we've got all sorts of people pulling down your podcasts. And so, you may need to go to a different ISP because we can't support that kind of traffic. That's a good problem to have, my friends. That's a good problem to have. But I'm not lying to you. As a matter of fact, give me some constitutional evidence, some actual citations in the Constitution where they have the ability to spend money on something they have no jurisdiction on, something in the ratification debates, somewhere where this Constitution was legally defined and set the terms and definitions of the Constitution, which is only the ratification debates, not the Federalist Papers, not the jurists that are making opinions that, oh, we believe we can do this. No, that has no constitutional standing. So prove me wrong. That's how powerful this message is. When we expose the truth, and then all of a sudden, we basically start rounding up all of these people. Remember Boehner? Remember Ryan? Remember all of these people who actually voted and were involved, all these people in Congress, all of them who voted for any unconstitutional spending, that created unconstitutional debt. It took away from the money that needed to be paid on our actual debt and paying off, because actually, if you go all the way back, we have not had any real debt. We've been able to pay all of our legitimate debt. We may have had to take on debt, but all of our legitimate debt has been paid. It's that simple, folks. And everything you see on that debt clock is an accumulation of the unconstitutional spending that has been done from Woodrow Wilson to today. Even Ronald Reagan, even Bush, even Trump unconstitutionally spent money. All need to be held accountable, and all should actually be brought forward. And this is the prisoner dilemma. And this is why this is such a beautiful thing, because what will end up happening is, okay, so we're going to ship you over here. And because you were involved in that particular deal with Sweden, with Germany, with China, with Japan, what have you, Israel, doesn't matter. All of these things were unconstitutionally done and cost us unconstitutional debt and money. They will be tied to these crimes, these high crimes, and we will actually then say, okay, we're going to send you over there so that they can get their pound of flesh out of you. Unless you can prove to us, unless you can give us the evidence how they knew because this is the prisoner dilemma. The first person that sings usually gets the deal, right? Well, all of a sudden you have 40 people that could really use this not going, and they're going to start pointing to, you know, the days, the letters, the communications, the documents. Oh, yeah. Oh, these guys, they knew that this was unconstitutional. They knew that they were working with us to undermine you, the people. Folks, this will all start flying out of their mouths to save their butts. That's what prisoners do. That's what prisoners do. That's why they call it the prisoner dilemma. Because they're just sitting there. You know, they know this honor amongst thieves and so forth. Remember that little statement that Hillary made? Look, we're all going to hang if this guy gets elected. Well, you know what? I think that was hyperbole. Because nobody did a perp walk, at least not yet. There's no reason why people haven't done a perp walk. As a matter of fact, there's good justification to start getting people to do perp walks, all of them. And so what that means is that's why it's important to start developing and nurturing constitutionalists so that we can start enforcing all of this, because the day we can start enforcing it is the day we close that debt clock. And as a matter of fact, I would look fondly 50 years from now, 100 years from now, and, you know, see our posterity being told that there was this time where this thing called the debt clock caused fear among the people, when everything that was being spent on that desk clock, that debt clock, desk clock, everything that was being spent on this debt clock was all unconstitutional. And the people knew nothing until their eyes were open to the truth of the Constitution through the ratification debates. I am telling you, and I am telling you in the words of Isaiah, that our framers are speaking to us from the dust, that the truth can be told and known to you. All you have to do is start exercising faith and start moving in the right direction. Read these things as you go, get smart as you go, and, you know, take on what you can. You don't have to lift a 1,000-pound object by yourself. There's plenty of people that will recognize that that object's got to go, and you can get enough people around that object to lift it one way or another. Remember, Aristotle could have moved the world had he had a lever long enough. And so we can do miraculous things if we understand the scientific principles, we understand the law, we understand the context. And that's the whole point of this show. That's why now's a good time to really start plugging. I hope that all of you have garnered something out of what we've covered so far. We're only on the 16th Amendment. So let me dive into the 16th Amendment now. That Congress shall have the power to lay taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any consensus or enumeration. Well, so incomes at that point in time were people. At that point in time, they had the ability to actually create a taxation on people. Now, they didn't have the ability, nor did they throw this little Congress out of the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. They didn't even add that. What they did was they just said, and this was all sold as a temporary amendment to allow Woodrow Wilson to spend enough money to buy us into prosperity. Thank you. Anyway, well, you can't do that. You can't buy yourself into, you can't take on debt and debt and debt to create your own richness as a government, because government does not have the ability to develop wealth. People do. Corporations do. But government only spends and destroys, so they could never create wealth. They can open the doors and help create wealth for corporations that become basically backers and become the pockets for the politicians and the parties. This is what was going on. These alliances were being created. So as you know, as we look at this amendment, this whole amendment was passed to create a taxation, the ability to tax individual income. Now, corporations at this point could not be taxed. Corporations at this point, the federal government had no regulations over them. And corporations were not personal incomes. They were body incomes. And so because it was a collective, because it was a publicly held company where multiple people from multiple, you know, even the dividends and how they operated, they did not have the ability to tax corporations until corporations were defined as individuals or as a person. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now, as we were just going into the details regarding corporations, this did not give Congress the power to be able to directly tax corporations. Corporations were public entities. They were registered with the states, and they were regulated by the states at this point in time. Now, doesn't mean that the federal government wasn't violating the Constitution, right? Doesn't mean that the federal government wasn't already usurping by this time, because Teddy Roosevelt had already gone outside the Constitution with his trust busters, going after large corporations and punishing them. What he was doing was he was showing the corporations of the United States that they were going to come after them and they were going to reel them in, that they were going to rain tyranny upon these corporations that supposedly were all evil, when that wasn't the truth at all. Now, what had to happen, what needed to happen, is we needed a court decision to actually pervert further the concept of the 16th Amendment. And what I mean by this is that they needed the court to legislate and redefine a corporation as a person. Because if a corporation is a person, then they can create the connection or make a leap from the 16th Amendment into the taxation of corporations. So if you understand what I'm saying, is that right here, the 16th Amendment only gave them the power to tax incomes. Well, corporations had incomes, but it wasn't an individual income. It wasn't considered income until it became a person because it was operational. You know, those are profits. That's not income. And so they had to change the identity of corporations so that the perception was that profits became income. See, profits mean nothing. That's not income. It is only something that you made money on. What about losses? So if you look at how they tax on all the income. They didn't give you any credit for losses. Companies that lost money, well, you weren't taxed. Maybe if you were not making income or profits. So what they also did by that ruling was it brought corporations who were now basically, I'll just call them, you know, monkeys on a string, dancing for the organ grinder, because now the federal government had the ability to start regulating them, getting in their knickers in so many different ways. And so they got the corporations to start actually playing politics. And as government, as the U.S. government became a bigger and bigger contractor in spending and creating what we call the GDP, because if you look at Boeing, if you look at, you know, these general contractors that are doing business and actually selling their wares to the government for millions and billions of dollars, well, yeah, they're making income off of tax dollars. Do you see what happens here? As the government prints money, they hand it over, and then the corporations then have to pay money back to the federal government in taxes. When we start creating these types of circles, it starts creating this pay-to-play. It starts creating a stage, or actually it creates this complex web work of corruption. Because this is how the government can start basically using leverage. Well, you know what? We're not going to be nice to you over here because, you know, you don't align with us. You're not voting and you're not supporting the policies that we want you to support. This is why by the end of the 90s, almost every corporation that had a contract with the federal government started basically touting the homosexual agenda. Because it was a part of the deep state. It's been a part of the overall undermining of the United States. And the same thing with creating this woke agenda. I mean, corporations were woke a long time ago. A long time ago. So when we start looking at the 16th Amendment and the epiphany that the federal government needed to create a corporation as a person, they needed to redefine corporations as persons so, one, they could start making money back off of them and actually having more leverage and more control over them to a point where they now use corporations as tools. So I get it that there's some people that look at corporations as all evil, all bad. They're not all evil. They're not all bad. But, you know, when you actually, you know, start going down this path of completely eliminating corporations, or you go down this path of saying, we don't want any money, because the Constitution Party has that position. They don't want any money from corporations, and they take pride in that. I'm not convinced that that's necessarily something to be proudful of, because bottom line, you may take money from anybody as long as they understand that, you know, they have no favors with you. Yeah, go ahead. And then when you come back to, you know, get favors from us, as long as you don't compromise yourself, you're okay. You don't have to worry, because regardless of, you know, it's kind of like what DuPont did with Germany. And if you've never heard this story, when DuPont was mining, and I think it was borax, but when DuPont was mining borax, they were actually dumping borax cheaper in Europe because our costs were less. So they basically, they were making a profit, but they were able to dump it for lower than what Germany was able to sell it for. In other words, Germany needed to sell it for a certain amount. And so what they did, thinking, okay, we're going to teach, you know, we're going to go after DuPont and show them, you know, who's boss on borax, because borax as a soap, as a this commodity in the 1800s became this, you know, huge demand for, or became a growing demand. So this German company started dumping borax for less than what DuPont could make it for. And you know what DuPont did? DuPont bought it up and actually turned it right back around and sold it to the Germans or to Europe at, you know, that same price. In other words, because what Germany could have done was if DuPont was selling borax for, you know, a lower price than what they could manufacture for and sell it, and then they came over to try to undercut because they had all this reserves and this supply, all they did was they hurt themselves by trying to go that aggressive and trying to use those types of tactics, where it became a win because DuPont was actually able to buy that product and turn it around for a profit. And so what do you do? You know, that this is when DuPont really started winning, because when you have a free open market, you can get away with that. And DuPont, the German company, because you got to remember, imports were taxed back in those days. So they had to even lower it a lot lower to hurt them so that they could get underneath DuPont's costs, because those taxes had to be reflected in that end price to hurt DuPont, right? Because if the American taxes raise that price to what their costs are a little bit higher, then it had no impact. And so if DuPont actually was buying that, I mean, it was a double win for the United States, because we were making taxes on it, and DuPont was able to buy it without even having to manufacture. Now their surpluses went up, and now they could make more money. So anyway, when we start looking at how certain things had to be done, the court was very integral in pushing the progressive or the communist ball down the road. And Hugo Black was a huge proponent for communism. You know, if you don't know anything about Hugo Black, you need to really look it up, because here is a Supreme Court justice that I believe was a 33rd degree Mason, as well as a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, if he wasn't a Mason, I know he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and I think he was like a Grand Dragon or whatever that. I don't know anything about the Klan and how they operate, but he was a Grand Poobah of the Ku Klux Klan. Anyway, so let's take a look at this 17th Amendment. Lots of people tell me what the 17th Amendment says, and it doesn't say that. The 17th Amendment does not change the Senate's responsibility to represent the state legislature. They're supposed to be responsive to their states. And what it does is it changes who is the one that basically chooses their senators in the states. Because previously, the House of Representatives and the Senate in each state legislature was the ones that actually chose their state, the senators in Congress. Well, the 17th Amendment changed that. And so we're going to get into this. And this supposedly was proposed in 1912 and ratified in 1913. And oh, by the way, this amendment was called for by the states, not by the federal government. This was a big, let's just say, conspiracy, that there were that many progressives in states by this point in time that they started yammering for this, and they got this amendment, and they knew what they were doing. Not that the 17th Amendment isn't a problem and evil. We'll be right back after these two messages.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so sorry for trying to rush to get into these promos and get my words out, but let me get into this a little bit more, because what we're looking at in the 17th Amendment, because most people say that the 17th Amendment took away the suffrage, or actually, so it did take away the state suffrage, but it didn't take away the representation of the state, nor did it take away the state's powers and state's rights. It only took away the state legislature's direct input and direct accountability, because the old saying is, he who pays the piper calls the tunes. And so what was happening in this, building up to this point in time, there were plenty of states that were refusing to seat or unable to seat senators. So the Senate was not getting, you know, up to quorum to what it needed. This was a big cabal, because supposedly there were these power struggles in some of these particular states. This power struggle was deliberate. It created a problem so that the solution was to take away their own power, because what they wanted and what they needed was they needed the most powerful house in Congress, because the ability to sign treaties, the ability to, you know, appoint and approve cabinet members, the Supreme Courts and so forth, because who's responsible for these rogue jurists that are out there legislating from the bench in the Supreme Court? It's the Senate. The Senate basically hoodwinks all these guys. Yeah, you know, anything you do is law. No. So all of the assertions, when you really listen to what somebody says about the 17th Amendment, it's usually not 100% true or not true at all. Because it didn't change the responsibility the Senate had for the state. But the bottom line is, like I said, he who pays the piper. So when banks, when these big contributors who pay these billions of dollars for a senator to get, or millions at least, millions of dollars to get a senator elected. I'll give you a good example. Look at Patty Murray. Patty Murray has millions of dollars coming in compared to her competitor, Smiley, Tiffany Smiley, that's running against her, and it is a close competition. And all this does, all this says, is that our government is being bought by the corporate global entities. It's that simple. This is why making all elections local is critical. I can't emphasize this enough. Understanding the concept of making all elections, because none of that money that Patty Murray brought in, none of the money that Liz Cheney was able to bring in, none of it should have been able to be used or spent in the election. The fact that the federal government allows you to do that is deliberately designed to undermine the basically control the people have over their own elections. They know they can't trust you. You know that. So they have to hedge their bets and make sure, but they need to make sure you feel good about being involved by going and actually voting. You want to start making changes and see substantial changes, you have to seize control of your counties and those who represent you at the county level. And it's not done by, you know, just creating a grassroots activist group. It has to be done by using First Amendment petitions and starting constitutional campaigns and creating a constitutional movement in your county. You can do this. I even think you can get away with this and do this in many of the blue states. It may take time. It won't take as much time at all in a red county, and it shouldn't take hardly any time in a red state. There is no reason why South Dakota, Wyoming, and some of these dark red states can't get this going, can't get this done in a matter of, let's just say, 2 election cycles, you know, this upcoming one and the next one. In other words, a 4-year cycle. We could actually have full control and have a state standing up and demanding full compliance to the Constitution within 4 years easily, within 4 years. And if we can actually speed dial this or actually, you know, kind of, you know, push this along by using, you know, some of these other states that we actually might, like Wyoming, getting Wyoming to pass this bill will actually help everybody understand the concept of this. When people go, what's so special about that bill? And then they start learning about that bill and what it does, they go, oh my gosh, we need a bill just like that. We need that bill in our state. You know what? I'm not selling this bill because I make money. I don't make a penny at any of this. So this has nothing, and this has nothing to do with GR. As a matter of fact, what I was going to say, and I never did say this, this bill, this HB 0132, was a bill that I submitted in a 1-page, you know, format that became 2 pages because some good men read the intent of this bill, and the man that was basically sponsoring this kind of helped these people understand the intent behind this bill, because Bob Wharf did understand that. And so Bob Wharf was integral in ensuring that these men, and they took the language and they understood some of the complexities, like a statutory committee, where I didn't understand this, but they actually moved this bill into a space that actually gave it validity and teeth to where this bill would become even more powerful than what I actually injected in my first attempt. And this all lends to his help, his inspiration, how these men, you know, all of a sudden took some faith and looking at this and realized, wow, yeah, all we need to do is do this, and let's do this. And boom, we created an awesome bill that would actually stand as the catalyst in Wyoming to demand and start moving every public servant. Because once this committee stands up, then they actually have to start creating an enforcement within the state to ensure that any county commissioner, any sheriff that's violating their oath of office by allowing unconstitutional government to be enforced or to be supported, then they've got to be removed and banned. Do you understand the ramifications of this bill? It's basically like, and that's what I'm talking about, it almost creates the enzyme that helps rebuild the cells and helps boost the immune system like that. We're going to be talking about this on Friday. So anyway, This is the 17th Amendment, again, proposed in 1912 and ratified in 1913. Questionably, Bill Bennett has evidence, I believe that's his name, has evidence that this was actually nefariously ratified and that Woodrow Wilson just took credit for it, that it was ratified, when really it wasn't, and it wasn't done constitutionally. But this can all be proven. But more importantly, folks, I have an article on the Constitutional Articles page that helps spell out how this one amendment can be rescinded. We do not have to repeal it. It can be just erased, like what they tried to do to the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, the original 13th, not the second 13th. Anyway, the Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state elected by the people thereof. So in other words, the senators will now be elected, shall be elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state of legislatures. Now, see, this is kind of interesting, because why did this actually state that they should have one vote? This needs to be probably taken to Keith Broders, and because he's the kind of guy that could actually go into the annals and so forth. If the Senate had one vote for each senator, this almost lends to the concept that in the House of Representatives, the states voted by delegation. That when it came to passage in the House of Representatives, it was not a popular vote. Each state got one vote. So in other words, it says that each senator shall have one vote, but it doesn't lay out how the representatives were, you know, that they got one vote each as well. It doesn't say that anywhere in the Constitution. So the point that it says this and supports this concept of one senator, one vote, kind of helps me understand that I don't think that was the intention for representatives, because the states were to kind of have this equal latitude. Now, they may have created a situation where these groups within the states started allowing themselves a popular or a democratic voting process. But I believe on certain things they did hold, and I'll have to ask Keith that was the case, because if not, they would have clearly said that each representative gets one vote. And I don't think that language is in Article 1 of the Constitution. It's worth investigating, don't you think? So anyway, they go into the electors, but I don't have enough time to get into this. So we're going to take the 17th Amendment up when we come back. And so this hopefully is enough interest for you that you'll want to come back and listen to this. And maybe I'll have time to talk to Keith Broders before tomorrow's episode. We'll see. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.